Welcome to Reg Talks, the podcast dedicated to the latest trends from the world of RegTech, FinTech, and financial regulations. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RegTech, Know Your Customer Limited. Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome Gary Mushrow, Head of Compliance Product at Orbital, as my guest. Gary is a seasoned product leader with a focus on compliance and risk in FinTech. With over 15 years of experience across banks, scale-ups, and higher growth fintechs, Gary has led compliance product strategy at companies at Payoneer, Currency Fair, and now Orbital, where he heads product compliance. His work spans everything from AML and sanctions screening with a sharp understanding of global financial regulations. Gary holds an MSc in finance, a diploma in GRC, and is a certified member of the International Compliance Association. Thanks for joining, Gary.
Thank you, Klaus. It was quite the introduction. Thank you.
Pleasure to have you. Let's dive right in. To begin with, can you please share a bit about your journey in compliance and how it led you to your current role at Orbital? What inspired you to join the digital asset space, and what challenges have you encountered along the way?
Thank you. Yeah, I think technology and its implementation in finance has always been something that has gripped me. The financial crime sides of the business is something that didn't take long for me to get involved in looking at how we prevent and how we work against that, starting by obviously seeing some of those controls and systems in action early in my career at Santander, and really getting the chance to jump into that area once I joined my first sort of fintech startup. And you get a lot of exposure to different areas of the business, and that was something that I was drew towards. And that's been a part of my career to date. It's probably where I excel best, is just understanding where we've got a particular framework for compliance in this framework that we need to implement and how technology can supplement that and act effectively.
Yeah, I can absolutely relate to that. At the beginning, when I'm a kind of a site starter into compliance, my background is technical. I have a degree in computer science. But once I got into it, it really captured my imagination and what can we do from our end to help this area, which is really important. Financial stability and all the possibilities of global finance is exciting. And so I see that mirrored a bit here. Can you tell me a bit more about Orbital? Because before we worked with Orbital, we didn't know that much. What does the latest venture that you got involved with actually do? How do you differentiate it in this very interesting market?
Yeah, so Orbital are a global payments platform. We've been around about 8 years now, orchestrating different payments flows. We pride ourselves on being a secure and seamless stablecoin option, also utilizing the power of traditional currencies as well to help our customers globally. We've got quite a footprint now after 8 years. We're authorized by the FCA in the UK and in Gibraltar as an EMI and a DLT. And we're looking at further expansion shortly.
All in one platform sounds really intriguing. So If you think about that, and multiple licenses as well, but if you think about it, that must be a huge feature set that you're having there. Can you go a little deeper on that? Why should anybody choose the Orbital platform?
Yeah, it's what it says on the tin in terms of we've got that all in one platform. We've been listening to our customers over that journey of 8 years and saying, okay, what are the problems that they're particularly trying to solve? One thing that we hear from our customers consistently is, the accessibility and availability of things like virtual IBANs, and having that mix of virtual IBANs, stablecoin wallets, and the ability to pay in and pay out for them and their customers across both traditional currencies and different stable coins interchangeably, and a lot of exotic currencies that we currently support. I think the number is up to around 80, if I'm not mistaken. So having that as that platform where a customer can log in and we can offer those services to them all in one place, that's our real strength. And that's what our customers are benefiting from at the moment, particularly when they're trying to move funds cross-border,
stablecoin is a key facet, a key part of that formula, which is helping us reduce fees for our customers and provide them with that ability to operate 365. So not have to operate and manage their liquidity on a normal fiat banking schedule. And it's a real benefit to finance teams that we're noticing from our customer feedback. And it's something we're going to keep driving from strength to strength.
Just to be sure I get this right, this sounds quite amazing. So first of all, you're licensed in multiple jurisdictions. You bridge both these stablecoin crypto and the traditional IBAN rails. And you have that in multiple jurisdictions and 24/7 full availability.
What we're trying to address is when we're listening to our customers, particularly those in emerging markets, we're listening to what they're struggling with and how our digital assets are actually helping them overcome those challenges. Like, for instance, a big one we hear quite often from our customers is that they're facing difficulties using the SWIFT system for settlements. And when we start to talk to customers about the usage of stablecoins in this space as an alternative, that's when we're getting real traction. We also have a lot of customers or their particular customers with no or limited access to USD banking and the ability to move USD around the world. And that's where, you know, stablecoins like USDT and USDC come into their own. It also, a real benefit of ours is that through the traditional payment rail system that we have, that's been around for quite the many years, there's so many different intermediaries that slow that whole purpose down. And that's where something like our platform comes into its own, because stablecoins are borderless and it means that we get fewer holdups for our customers, particularly on things like misalignment of time zones. And we give our customers a lot of visibility on their transactions on our platform, so it's less opaque for them. And we make it clear what they're paying for their transactions, their fees, how long these transactions will settle for. And I think it's almost sort of breaking barriers for customers in emerging markets without access to those traditional banking rails, giving them that near instant 24/7 settlement. It's turning payments that they were once executing into minutes rather than days. And that's the feedback we're hearing from our customers, and that's the use case we've tried to tackle.
I absolutely understand that, and I can see how, especially in emerging markets, that would be a big feature. But honestly, even the first world can improve a lot. Like, most of our clients are larger financial institutions. They obviously pay through the standard rails, and we live with all these delays and all these limited visibility. My CFO would be glad if one of the big banks would send the payments through your platform, because then we would have visibility and it would be 24/7 or overnight, not just in chunks during the day and all that. I absolutely agree. It's a huge feature.
Yeah, being able to offer that on and off ramp into our customers is something which, it does bring you pride when you're seeing the use cases come into action off the paper. And some of the introductory meetings that we have with our customers and their finance teams, and actually bringing to life and seeing it after those initial consultations and those initial meetings, and seeing those teams take advantage of the product we have to offer. It's satisfying to talk about, but it's also satisfying to see in action.
That's part of the startup journey that we both have. It is just this unique satisfaction of working at something that moves something in the world, where you can actually see it working then after a while. It's fascinating. I don't think it's easy to go back to a standard 9-to-5 after that.
I mean, there's not many platforms that offer what we do in terms of being that all-in-one platform where our customers can log in and access those services like first name IBANs and on and off ramp into stablecoin or traditional currencies, as we call them, and doing that in real time. And it doesn't matter that you have to log on to the platform at 11 o'clock at night. The idea that these things can still be done. And then as you relate to it, it's something that traditional finance teams just haven't had the ability to do. There's always been a time gap. There's always been an opportunity to reduce those times, particularly in payments. And that's where stablecoin and providers like us are filling that gap. And there's no need for people to wait around for their money anymore.
That's right, yeah. I flinched a little when you mentioned multiple licenses. That must have been a good bit of work. Could you explain the significance of holding licenses across different jurisdictions? Why go to this extent?
So from a customer's perspective, we're seeing a multi-licensing model is really useful. We're seeing that we can offer different products across different licenses. We also offer customers redundancy as well. If there is a particular issue or sort of downtime with our service with one particular entity in their license, holding that multi-license model means that our customers, our service has that redundancy. And it also means that we can also service different customers in different locations. And so that's why we are building out that licensing model. We obviously do have different types of licenses. And as I mentioned earlier, we're regulated in the UK as a payment service provider. In Gibraltar, we have an e-money institution license, and we're a VASP as well, a virtual asset service provider in Gibraltar, as well as one in Estonia. We have authorization in Switzerland as well, a VQF SRO member in Switzerland. And what that allows us to do is service customers in different jurisdictions, offer them different services. As I say, it really is to the customer's benefit that we have these licenses, because it does offer redundancy in these places. And it also offers possibility as well, possibility in new products, possibility of quicker payments flows. And yeah, it is the way forward, I think.
You mentioned you have VASP license, so you're also under the FATF virtual asset regulation or recommendation transposed into regulations everywhere. Even listeners with not so much of a crypto background will have heard of the FATF travel rule. What do you think about that? How does it apply in your space where you cross over?
Yeah, it's been a big piece for us, and particularly our customers and in the education side of it, as well as the implementation of the changes we've had to make. Because we are licensed in the EU, we do have to abide by travel rule regulation. When we break down travel rule, it's quite clear to people, and people are aware of what it is and that it has been around essentially in a context for traditional fiat payments. And that even in fiat payments, our banks do send information about the payment to their counterparties. So banks know where a payment is originated. They know who the beneficiary of that payment is. And it helps them with their AML processes, such as transaction monitoring. And what that is doing is bringing that into the digital asset world, particularly around B2B payments and B2B2C payments. And it means that under our different licenses, we have different obligations for travel rule. But essentially what we're doing with our customers is taking them on a journey and saying, okay, this is, particularly in the EU, this is more than you probably provided before when we were complying with something like the Estonian travel rule requirements, moving up into the EU travel rule requirements, which are being published. But it's the education piece about explaining why, where we're capturing that from the customer, helping them with that integration piece where they're providing us with more data and explaining why or how we're going to use that data. And with travel rule, you've got different levels of requirements from each of the regulators where we're licensed. So it could be that there is regulatory divergence in a sense between two licenses. So when we have customers on particular licenses, we are helping them with that integration. And it's also useful data on our side, of course, for the primary reason of preventing financial crime and using that in our wider AML framework. So yeah, travel rule is not something new to all of us who've obviously been operating in payments, in a sense that it's been a long time thing for fiat payments, banks communicating with each other. But this is us saying as virtual asset service providers in the digital asset world, okay, we are going to send each other this information as mandated by our regulators, and we're going to understand who the originators and beneficiaries are of our payments.
Yeah, it does make sense. In the end, you'll exclude some elements who would rather stay underground and not visible, but you win the huge area of ledgered payments where all those benefits that we discussed earlier are really, really helpful, and it's such a bigger experience and a bigger area. In regulations, there's another big thing that's MiCA or MiCA. How do you say it, actually? How are you preparing for the potential impact of that to operations and clients? Kind of a similar story?
Yeah, it's been of a similar scale. to our travel rule project internally, something we're taking super seriously. You'd see probably from the size of the teams that are working on it and how multi-department it is, and how if you are truly embedding something like travel rule or even, you know, Mika more generally, it is a whole of company endeavor. It's not something which is done in isolation within a couple of departments. So particularly with Mika, we've been, you know, at a really base level, we've been looking at aligning all of our operational policies and requirements and making sure that they all are compliant with Mika, and things like capital adequacy and risk disclosures. I think that the real impact we're looking at with Mika is how it will probably segment the market in the stablecoin space, the sort of divergence between those stablecoins which are regulated under Mika that can be used within the European Economic Area, and those digital assets which are non-compliant and will face some sort of usage restriction. So we're actively working as a company to look at our digital asset base, look at our customers, look at our licensing, and actively ensuring we're working for full compliance on our platform and ensuring that we're Mika compliant. That's something that's really important to the business. I think if you think about it from our customers' perspective, it brings them a lot of clarity. It allows them to scale their operations, knowing that they're with a provider who's operating within a regulated framework. So it is a lot of work for us, but it's something our customers can be confident with. And that is the intention and spirit of it. Yeah. So it's been taken quite seriously.
I believe that. And what I'm hearing there is actually that you and your position create tremendous business value with your specific decisions that open these markets and segment them in the right way and actually allow the whole company to go forward. Amazing. Really big part. That's what I meant in the beginning. It's so interesting what compliance actually means to businesses and how it interacts with the rest. It's much more fascinating than you'd think if you come from a different area into it. You think, oh, this is just checkbox. No, this is here where the real decisions are made.
Yeah, I think the real strength is Orbital and referencing back to our multi-licensing model. Things like our security certifications, that's a big thing. You know, if we talk about more general compliance, we take it really seriously. If, you know, you take a look at our website and look at the core things we've invested in for our platform, like ISO 27001 for our customers, SOC 2, Type 2, Cyber Essentials Plus. These are all things that, along with things like travel rule and Mika compliance, showing our customers that we're taking compliance seriously. It's a big part of the culture of our company, and it's a big part of the products that we develop for them. And they need to feel safe in that when their money is within our platform, that it's protected. And that, you know, particularly with travel rule, we're seeing, if you just read on the market, you read pages like LinkedIn, you read forums, you're seeing a lot of VASPs pop up in these sort of overseas territories where there's not much regulation around them and there's not much stability or even, in fact, any sort of licensing framework or very light licensing framework around these VASPs. I do say to customers, you know, we will at Orbital always help in terms of regulatory change, any changes that we need to make and you need to make to be compliant. Because, I mean, we're trying to do things, we are doing things safely here, and it is worth coming on that journey with us, and we'll make it as frictionless as possible for you and, you know, if they have got customers as well, our customers. So, yeah, it's a big part of our culture, it's a big part of our message, and it's a big part of our branding that we are one of the most compliant providers out there.
Yeah, but you also built a very innovative and really impressive platform there in tech. What innovations would you say are you most excited about that could shape how the future of compliance look there in the digital asset ecosystem?
I think it's looking at the adoption of stablecoin. It's not a case of trying to prove out that use case to people anymore. We've got perfect examples of how stablecoins and that blend of fiat on our platform are actually alive now, and they're providing real-world use cases for customers. I think, to an extent, that the period of experimentation for stablecoin usage still exists a little bit. But it's becoming like just a less and less because companies are actually clear on the advantages that stablecoin provides.
So the innovation is more actually the adoption is bringing it in this manageable form and secure and compliant into the market. And that in itself is a huge jump. I absolutely see that. Yeah. So where do you think, if you think about bigger ecosystem or the bigger picture here, where do you think we are on the adoption curve? If you look at other companies, obviously you're more at the cutting edge, but you will see a lot more companies out there not using this. Where are we? Are we at the in the first quarter or are we in the third quarter of adoption? There's a lot happening.
So in terms of adoption, I'd say we're at the end of the tail. We're at the end of the tail of, let's use a snake, for example, and we're working our way up that long tail. I think if you look at fiat use for cross-border payments now, it's still huge compared to that of stablecoins. We see that increasing incrementally quarter by quarter. That's going up. But I think we're just on the start of the journey of around the use cases that can be displayed by our platform and technology like it. I mean, the days of sort of using stablecoins. So around just building on that point, we're seeing sort of stablecoins unlocking a level of capital efficiency that we went through before that simply isn't possible with legacy fiat rails. We're seeing companies, I mean, even on our book, on our platform, moving from end of day batch settlements to real-time treasury sweeps across jurisdictions. And that's all being powered by stablecoins. I think a big thing we'll see in the coming years is more and more finance teams looking to integrate stablecoins into existing ERP systems and treasury management platforms. We'll see that accelerating. Yeah.
Before we discuss this podcast, I did hear that you are now working with multinational companies already. So that's one bit where you could say the adoption is progressing there, right?
Yeah.
Because that's for us also, with our technology, always a measure when we get into, yes, like market leaders in their regions. But it's even more interesting or more significant for us and the investors in our company that we actually made it into multinational entities there. In our case, it's banks. But nonetheless, if you go across a specific region and go larger, that's always a big step. And you've done the same, right?
Yeah, we're seeing sort of a structural shift. I mean, lots of the big enterprises that you see worldwide are probably watched in the last couple of years with sort of a sense of curiosity around stablecoin use. They've watched how it's played out, but you can see the massive growth, the massive drive establishments like JP Morgan are taking in the stablecoin and digital asset space, and how they're using them for settlement. And I think just growing frustrations with traditional correspondent banking systems, particularly around settlement delays and cutoff times and fees that people can't explain why they're paying such a high fee to move money from one point to another. And as the stablecoin sort of ecosystem is matured, and we're seeing this on our platform as well, we're seeing big enterprises actually coming to use the platform and moving beyond sort of a stance of being crypto onshore, crypto naive, to being sort of crypto native, and thinking about tools like our platform to use in serious, you know, real world scenarios for their business. And yeah, you would say over the last sort of 8 years, we've seen the client base shifts entirely from smaller firms towards larger and larger firms who are looking for stablecoin adoption and having the ability to work on multi-asset treasury manager, well, multi-asset management of currencies on our platform.
That is something, multi-asset treasury management. I have one question that I ask everybody in this podcast, and that is, considering you're in different regulations, you will have something to say about it. If you were to switch roles and tomorrow woke up and you'd have become the global regulator and have a power, what would you do?
I mean, a global regulator is quite a thing. I think what we're seeing a lot in the real world right now is what you probably describe as regulatory arbitrage between different regulatory providers outside the EU and in different places around the world. I think I probably prioritize regulatory clarity because there are some areas in the regulation where it is emerging and it's being written sort of month on month. I think the point in time where stable coins like used for sort of retail speculation has sort of ended and it's fundamentally different from those used for B2B payments or wholesale settlement. So I'd look at, particularly with something like a project we just worked on, which is Travel Rule, where we're, as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at the market, we're seeing different virtual asset service providers pop up in different countries. And we're seeing, we're speaking to our clients and feedback from our clients and understanding the pain points for them in providing some of that data. I think if I was a global regulatory body, I'd standardize that right across all of the different territories so that there wasn't chance for that sort of, you know, arbitrage for a virtual asset service provider, which popped up on a particular territory. And they said something like Travel Rule didn't apply. I think that would bring a lot of clarity to the industry about how it's going to be implemented and how it's going to work. And it would provide a lot of clarity going forward for customers is always good, right? I think there's something that will just come with time, which is as the regulatory frameworks mature around crypto assets, people become more clear on the direction in which certain regulators are going. I think we have to be really careful that we don't stifle innovation with over-regulation in this space, because it's remarkable how far it's come in a few short years. And I think, look, it's going to be under increased pressure because the expectation is that the regulatory requirements on something like fiat payment rails are mirrored across the digital asset space. But it's really key that the level of innovation is kept high, the regulation is kept manageable and understandable, and it's understood why particular regulations are being put in place or being implemented. That gives creators and companies like ours and the space and the ability to think outside of the box, think about what sort of services and products will be of use to our customers. And yeah, that's where I go with that.
It's always a difficult balance, and I agree and don't think that this balance was always right in the past between regulation and innovation. And like from a tech perspective or from our perspective, I would always say, well, regulation can be strong if there is technology that helps mitigate the effects again. But actually, another thought came to my mind there, and you had me actually worried there. When we started the podcast a few years ago, like that last question just was a little add-on. You thought, oh yeah, that's a good one to ask everybody, because the idea was generally that there would be regulation that would come together over time in the world. I think that narrative, due to the recent events, is somewhat gone. There is not that certainty anymore that we had a few years ago, but in the end, there will be a global regulation that kind of unifies everything. Doesn't seem to be that likely at the moment.
No, I'd agree. And it's only something I said because you've made me the global head of regulation for the digital asset space.
Well, I'm sorry, Gary. These are the rules and I make them. It's my podcast. But you got me thinking there.
Yeah, I think, look, if we stand back and say, okay, we've got a whole host of different regulators worldwide who are looking at the digital asset space and looking at how stablecoins are utilized and the real world use cases in which they're being administered by companies, and reducing any sort of jurisdictional fragmentation around regulation would help, because, I mean, regulatory arbitrage doesn't help anybody. It doesn't benefit anyone long term. Short term it could, but long term it doesn't really help. It adds compliance cost onto multi-license and multi-jurisdictional businesses. And I think a more tiered approach to frameworks would help. It would help segregate sort of systematic risk from enterprise utility.
Yeah. Well, with that, Gary, this has been fascinating. I have a completely new appreciation of the role of compliance in driving, especially this asset space. Absolutely amazing. Thank you for this podcast. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Reg Talks. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RegTech provider, Know Your Customer. If you liked the episode, please subscribe to the whole series and leave us a review. And if you'd like to connect with us, suggest a guest or a topic for an upcoming episode, please send us a message at info@knowyourcustomer.com or visit knowyourcustomer.com/rectalks.